Okay, Shabbat Shalom. This is a special Sabbath. It is called Shabbat Shuva, the Sabbath of return, Sabbath of repentance. And there is a special reading. And the purpose of me bringing that up is that throughout the course of the week, as I was preparing, I noticed that a lot of what I was putting into my notes fit in with the subject of the text that is the special reading this week. So you get today the surprise edition of the incorporation of what is called the Torah reading for this special Sabbath, Shabbat Shuva, and it's going to be part of my class today, and I'm looking forward to it. The words, the Torah reading, the special reading for today comes from Deuteronomy chapter 32. In fact, it includes the entire chapter, Deuteronomy 32 verses 1 through 52, and it contains the words of a song. In Hebrew, shirah. Some translations will call it a poem. But shirah is typically a song, and it's a song that is written by none other than Moses. At the bidding of Jehovah, Jehovah tells Moses to write the words of a song. The words were to be recorded by Moses, and they were to be taught to the children of Israel. And these words were to be in the mouths of the children of Israel, to be placed inside of them for a very important reason. The words of this song would serve as a witness against Israel in days to come, a witness of what was expected and what could be expected if they don't adhere to the teaching, a teaching that Moses himself wrote. It's quite a gloomy picture of rebellion and the consequences for that rebellion. And what I'd like to start off with today is to let you know that the lyrics of this song, or the words of this song recorded in Deuteronomy chapter 32, are played out in the eyes and ears of the people of the 7th century BCE. And I also want to tell you that there are three prophetic voices who sang the song of Moses, in a sense. Three prophetic voices in the 7th century BCE who, if I can use this phrase, were singing from the same hymnal. And so it's fitting that today, on Shabbat Shuva, that we incorporate into our current series on Torah, in class number 8, Ha'azinu, give ear. Ha'azinu. So class 8, I've entitled Ha'azinu, the song. The time had come in the 7th century BCE to root out, to pull down, to destroy, and to overthrow. The time had arrived. But based on the words revealed to us by the prophet Amos of Tekoa, Amos tells us that Jehovah will do nothing unless he reveals his secret unto his servants, the prophets. And true to his word, if you remember in the Torah, when the children of Israel were assembled at the foot of Sinai, Jehovah spoke, and there was thundering and lightning and dark clouds of tempest, and the people were so fearful of their life that they requested of Moses, you go speak to Jehovah, you come back and tell us what he said, and everything will be okay. But we don't want to go through this anymore. So because of that request, Moses goes to Jehovah, he gives the request to Jehovah, and Jehovah says, what they've said right. And thus began the office or the role of a Navi, a prophet. And Deuteronomy 18 tells us about that role. The people requested a prophet, and Jehovah obliged. And throughout history, throughout the biblical history, Jehovah has always sent the prophets. And if you read in the historical books and throughout the prophetic text themselves, Jeremiah brings this up quite often. Jehovah is speaking, and he said, I sent to you day and night my prophets from morning until evening, day after day. And people didn't listen. But nonetheless, before Jehovah acts in history, he will set up a prophet. He will send forth a prophet. As the scriptures say, lift your voice like a trumpet. And these prophets speak up and they speak out about the injustices in the world around them and in the violations against God's ways. And they do it without fear, without equivocation, and they stand boldly as representatives for the Creator. The prophets were in a strange position. To Jehovah, or in the presence of Jehovah, they represent the people, and they intercede, and they stand up on behalf of the people many times. But to the people that they go to deliver the message, they represent Jehovah. And they have an unbending rigidity when it comes to the adherence of God's ways, because they can't help but speak for the Creator who sends them. The words which they speak are not their own. They are inspirited, and they speak the flaming, inspired words of the Creator. And that is what happens throughout the biblical text. Jehovah is long-suffering. We learn this very early in the text. We read about Jehovah's characteristics, and one of those is that he's long-suffering, and as the Hebrew puts it, rav chesed, much loving kindness. And because of those qualities, Jehovah withholds at times the enacting of punishment because he's so forgiving, because he is so willing to extend grace to his people. And so he gives room for repentance. And that's the case that we're dealing with today. The words that were written by Moses in a song contained in Deuteronomy chapter 32 go back in time to roughly 1400 BCE. And there they were in the Moses scroll, the words of a song. But they had dire consequences, were part of the lyrics, if you will, to this song. And over and over, as you read the words to this song, you'll see that if people continued to disobey, they would reap the consequences, the dire consequences of the words of the song. But as always, God raised up at the right time the right people. When the time had come for these words to be enacted, it's as if an unseen guided hand had been orchestrating events behind the scenes, if you will. And so a generation before the end, the decreed end, a generation before, God raises up the necessary people to see everything come to pass. He brings forth from the line of the celebrated King David, he brings forth a righteous branch of the Davidic line, a promised one. In fact, this particular person that God raises up from the Davidic line at the right time, he being the right person, his birth was predicted 300 some odd years before he arrives on the scene. And he's named by name. The name is Josiah. It's in 1 Kings chapter 13 where this prediction of this promised seed is given. And in 1 Kings chapter 13, one of the things that we read is that accompanying the appearance of this one Davidic person who God chooses, along with that, we get a little bit of what he will do. And what he'll do is he'll bring about, if you will, a cleansing of the priesthood and a downfall of the idolatrous altars. So whenever Josiah comes, we know in 1 Kings 13, hundreds of years before he arrives, that somehow, in some way, he will be doing a religious reform. And this is important. But Jehovah also brought forth, ahead of time, as to his plan, a descendant of a Levitical clan by the name of Kohath. He raises up and chooses the line of Kohath, descended from Levi, the same group which brought us Aaron, Moses, and Miriam. And like Josiah, this priest was selected prior to his birth. So I want you to think about this. Jehovah, we learn in the book of Jeremiah that Jehovah knew Jeremiah before he was formed in the womb. Think about that. Jeremiah chapter 1 tells us before he comes out of the belly, Jehovah set him apart as a prophet. So what we have in the 7th century BCE is Jehovah, through his foreknowledge, identifies a descendant of David and a descendant of Levi who will bring forward a possibility for redemption. The potential is there. The potential is ripe. And these two young men, both selected before their birth, overlap for 18 years. 18 years, their roles overlap, and yet we have no record in the biblical history of the two ever meeting. You know, you might think that they would have worked together, and you would have stories of Jeremiah going into the throne room, if you will, but none of that's mentioned. We do get a few indications that Jeremiah knew of what Josiah was doing, obviously, but not the other way around. Josiah never mentions Jeremiah. In fact, well, we'll get to that in a minute. I'll tell you this. The thing that connects these two selected individuals, selected by Jehovah, the thing other than destiny, if I can use that phrase, which brings these two together are the words of a scroll. The words of a scroll that were written by Moses and discovered in the temple in 622 BCE. Now, I've shown before in previous classes that Josiah's reform is based, interestingly enough, in the language used in the text clues us in on this, that the reform that Josiah brings about is based upon language, idioms, phrases that come exclusively from the book of Deuteronomy. That is to say, when you read what he did, it falls perfectly in line with what someone would do if they had read Deuteronomy. And it's exclusive to Deuteronomy. Josiah, I would like to say, was careful to follow the letter of the law of the newly discovered scroll. The letter of the law. And he is known as, I know you know this passage, but this is my warm-up. In 2 Kings 23, and verse 25, it says, "And like him, Josiah, was there no king before him, that turned to Jehovah with all his heart, with all his soul, and with all his everything. According to all the Torah of Moses, neither after him arose there any like him. Even in the description of Josiah, here in 2 Kings 23, verse 25, language used exclusively in Deuteronomy, or in the material that makes up our Deuteronomy, to be very careful how I say that, is used to describe his life and his faith. He's a Deuteronomy man, and so is Jeremiah. But when the scroll was discovered, when the scroll was brought out and read by Shaphan to the king sends an entourage not to Jeremiah, but to someone else. And this someone else's name was Huldah. I want you to go with me this morning to 2 Kings 22, verse 15. 2 Kings 22, beginning in verse 15. Thus says Jehovah, God of Israel, tell the man that sent you to me. These are the words of Huldah the prophetess. Thus says Jehovah, behold, I will bring evil upon this place and upon its inhabitants, even all the words of the scroll which the king of Judah has read, because they've forsaken me and have burned incense to other gods, that they might provoke me to anger with all the works of their hands. Therefore, my wrath shall be kindled against this place and shall not be quenched. But to the king of Judah who sent you to inquire of Jehovah, thus shall you say to him, thus says Jehovah, God of Israel, regarding the words which you have heard, because your heart was tender or soft, and you have humbled yourself before Jehovah when you did hear what I spoke against this place and against its inhabitants, that they should become a desolation and a curse, and you've rent your clothes and wept before me, I also have heard thee, says Jehovah. Behold, therefore, I will gather thee unto thy fathers, and you shall be gathered into thy grave in peace, and your eyes shall not see all the evil which I shall bring upon this place. And they brought back word to the king. Now, this particular prophetess by the name of Huldah, who lives in a place called the Mishneh, a certain sector of the ancient old city, not the modern old city, the ancient old city. Huldah is in the Mishneh. They come to her, and she proclaims that what is coming is, it's going to be the bringing about of a desolation and a curse. Now, what I want to bring out today is that there are two things that can be seen. On the outside, what follows these words is a great reformation. And it seems that everything is going well. But from the outset, Huldah sees through, and she doesn't say that great things are going to happen in this kingdom. There's going to be a restoration of the temple and the sacrificial cult. There's going to be, because of the discovery of the scroll, the people's hearts are going to be right with Jehovah their God. No, what she says is desolation and curse is coming. Now, she does say that Josiah, because he has softened his heart, which, by the way, uses language from Deuteronomy and only Deuteronomy. That phrase is only found in Deuteronomy. But she says, because of that, Josiah will not see all the horror that comes on this place. But bad is coming. Understand that bad is coming, and there is no turning back. As the writer of Kings says, there was no remedy. None. And why is this? Why is this? Because it says, they have forsaken me. Jehovah is speaking through the prophetess Huldah, and Jehovah says, they have forsaken me. Now, only one book of the Pentateuch talks about forsaking Jehovah, believe it or not, and that forsaking leading to a curse. Go with me to Deuteronomy chapter 28. I have some important things to share today. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 20. 28 and verse 20. And I have lots of verses to cover today. Jehovah shall send upon thee cursing, confusion, and failure in all that you set your hand to do until you are destroyed and until you perish quickly because of the wickedness of your doings in that you have forsaken me. This is one of the curses of the law. You want to talk about the curse of the law? We're into it today. We're talking about Ha'azinu, the prayer. Give ear. It begins, give ear. And part of this, prior to the song, we have the blessings and the curses, this being a curse. Now go with me to Deuteronomy 31. We're talking about the fact that the forsaking of Jehovah, when it comes to the five books, is only mentioned in Devarim in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 31, verse 16. And Jehovah said to Moses, "Behold, you shall sleep with your fathers, and this people will rise up and go astray after the gods of the strangers of the land, into which they go to be among them, and will forsake me and break my covenant, which I have made with them. Then my anger will burn against them on this day, and I will forsake them. And I will hide my face from them, and they shall be devoured, and many evils and troubles shall befall them, so that they will say on that day, are not these evils come upon us because our God is not among us?" And it goes on. This idea of forsaking Jehovah is only found in Deuteronomy. And when Huldah entertains those who have heard the words of the scroll, and she is speaking on behalf of Jehovah, she references the words of the scroll that they've heard, and she uses language only found in Deuteronomy. She also talks about that they have forsaken Jehovah for other gods. This phrase, Elohim Akarim, Elohim Akarim, is used 18 times in Deuteronomy. That does appear in the 10 words. You shall have, lo, you shall have Elohim Akarim, Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5. But again, that's a text which, although there are differences between the two, it puts the phrase Elohim Akarim in Deuteronomy. There's one other text in Exodus that mentions Elohim Akarim, other gods, and it's Exodus 23:13. But otherwise, this phrase, too, comes from the content that's in the book of Deuteronomy, which would have made up the scroll that was read in Josiah's day, and which Huldah is using as the basis for this prediction of the impending doom. Other gods. Here are some verses. I can't possibly go through all the verses that I've assembled today, so write these down as examples of other gods in Deuteronomy. Chapter 7 and verse 4. 8:19, 11:28, 28:36, also verse 64. Now look at Deuteronomy 31 and verse 18. I will read this one. "And I will surely hide my face on that day for all the evils which they have perpetrated, in that they have turned to other gods." Remember, this is what... it's almost as if Huldah is looking at what is now in our Deuteronomy 31 and 32. She's almost quoting verbatim what we see here. You have forsaken me. You followed other gods. Look at verse 19. Now, therefore, write this poem or song for yourselves. Teach it to the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths that this poem or song may be a witness for me against the children of Israel. For when I shall have brought them into the land of which I swore to their fathers, one flowing with milk and honey, and they shall eaten and filled themselves and grown fat, then they will turn to other gods and serve them and provoke me and break my covenant. The curses are coming upon the children of Israel because of the words of a song and the decree that was given so long ago that if you do these things, you'll be blessed. If you don't do them, curses and death. Notice Huldah says, she makes mention of the fact through Jehovah speaks through her and says, they have provoked me or vexed me. That, too, is only found in Deuteronomy. I want you to understand that when, as my teacher has said before, when it's right, everything fits. My proposal to you is that the scroll that was discovered in the days of Josiah was not Genesis through Deuteronomy, but it was specifically consisting of content which is in our Deuteronomy. And it works from every angle. When Josiah does a reform, everything matches according to Deuteronomy and only Deuteronomy. When Huldah gives a prophetic word about the words of the scroll, she makes reference and points only to Deuteronomy. Look at chapter 31 of Deuteronomy, verse 29. For I know that after my death you shall surely become corrupted and turn aside from the way which I've commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days because you will do evil in the sight of Jehovah to provoke him to anger. See? Provoke him to anger. That's the words that Huldah used. It's not like this is everywhere else in the Bible. Provoking to anger is in Deuteronomy 4:25. It's in chapter 9, verse 18. It's in chapter 31, verse 29. And look at the words of the song. Go to chapter 32 of Deuteronomy, and I want to read you verse 16. They've provoked him to jealousy with strange gods. With abominations, they provoked him to anger. But that's not the only place. Look down at verse 21. They move me to jealousy with a no god. They have provoked me to anger with their vanities. Jehovah speaks through Huldah the prophet, and he says that this provocation is associated with the work of their hands. Now, you can search far and wide in the five books, but the only place that you're going to find the work of their hands is in the book of Deuteronomy. Now, quite often, and this is interesting, quite often the phrase, by the way, it's seven times total, one, two, three, four, five, six. Six of those talk about what could come about if you use your hands for the good. These blessings will come upon you for the work of your hands. Your work of your hands will be blessed. But when you use it for the bad, look at chapter 31, verse 29 again. This time, look for the phrase work of hands. 31:29. For I know that after my death you will surely become corrupted and turn aside from the way which I've commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days because you'll do evil in the sight of Jehovah to provoke him to anger. How? Through the work of your hands. Huldah uses that phrase. Wrath leads to destruction and exile. Huldah makes that clear. Look at Deuteronomy 29. Deuteronomy 29. And I want to begin in verse 20. And Jehovah shall mark him off for evil out of all the tribes of Israel, according to all the curses of the covenant that are written in this scroll of the teaching, or scroll of the Torah. So that the generation to come of your children that shall rise up after you, and the alien that shall come from a far land shall say when they see the plagues of that land and the sickness which Jehovah has laid upon it, and that the whole land is brimstone and salt and burning, that it is not sown, nor bears, nor does any grass grow in it, like the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zeboyim, which Jehovah overthrew in his anger and in his wrath. Then all the nations shall say, why has Jehovah done this to this land? What means the heat of this great anger? Then men shall say, because they have forsaken the covenant of Jehovah, God of their fathers, which he made with them when he brought them out of the land of Egypt. For they went and served other gods and worshiped them, gods whom they knew not and whom he had not given to them. And the anger of Jehovah burned against this land to bring upon it all the curses that are written in this scroll. And Jehovah rooted them out of their land in anger and in wrath and in great indignation and cast them into another land as it is this day. What this says is this is written in the prophetic future and looks back upon what is to come about because of the words of this scroll. Again, when it says Jehovah's heart was that Josiah's heart was softened in 2 Kings 22:19, the only time that it uses that phrase, softening of the heart, that specific phrase that's found in 2 Kings 22:19, is in Deuteronomy chapter 20 and verse 3. The context is about going to war and having sort of a timidity, being a little bit nervous, scared, having a soft heart. Desolation is indeed coming. And Huldah makes that clear. Look with me at Deuteronomy 28 and verse 37, please. Deuteronomy 28, 37. It says, and you shall become an astonishment, a proverb, and a byword among all the nations into which Jehovah shall lead you. That word astonishment in Hebrew is shama, shama. And that is used exactly to describe the desolation according to the words of Jehovah through Huldah. So if you note, put this in the column of more evidence that the scroll which was discovered consisted of material from Deuteronomy. And if two witnesses were not enough, the reform of Josiah, as well as the prophetic words of Huldah, as if two witnesses weren't enough to make this point, One more voice in these days declared what was coming with amazing clarity. Like Huldah and Jeremiah, the word of Jehovah came also to him. His name? Open your Bibles to Zephaniah. Zephaniah. Zephaniah chapter 1, verse 1. The word of Jehovah, which came to Zephaniah, the son of Cushi, the son of Gedaliah, the son of Amariah, the son of Hiskiah, in the days of Josiah, the son of Amon, king of Judah. So I want you to let that sink in. I'm not sure that people, even though it's been there, know that Zephaniah was prophesying in the days of Josiah. What that means is that between 640 BCE and 609 BCE, Zephaniah, the prophet, is having the word of Jehovah come to him. So we've got the word of Jehovah coming to Huldah. We've got the word of Jehovah coming to Jeremiah, and we've got the word of Jehovah coming to Zephaniah. All three of these and their message lines up. And so it's important that we understand the words of Zephaniah in this context, because as the circle tightens, as we begin to look at the evidence from the time of the discovery of the scroll, they ought to all agree, if we're right. Now, the first thing that I'd like to tell you is that this prophet Zephaniah begins his words with a very gloomy picture. Now, this is the point I want to stress. I know you get it, and I get accused of sometimes of belaboring a point. So excuse me as I belabor this point. I want you to get that the message, even though all around Huldah and Jeremiah and Zephaniah, is that the temple's restored. The ark is in its place. The priests are dressed in their beautiful robes. The sacrifices are being brought. The savor, the sweet savor, is extending into the clouds. And the three prophetic voices don't buy it. In fact, Zephaniah, verse 2 of chapter 1, this is in the days of Josiah. I will utterly consume all things from off the face of the ground, says Jehovah. I'll consume man and beast, birds of the sky, fishes of the sea, and the stumbling blocks with the wicked. And I will cut off man from the face of the earth, says Jehovah. He sees and describes the destruction as a reversal of the creation described in Genesis. Look at the order. He's going to start with man, beast, birds, fish. And if you look at that in reverse, it's saying he's going to undo the creation. Now, another prophetic voice at that time said something similar. Go with me to Jeremiah chapter 4. Jeremiah chapter 4, and let's begin in verse 23. Jeremiah says this, I beheld the earth, and lo, it was waste and void. By the way, this is the only occurrence of the Hebrew tohu vavohu other than what is recorded in the priestly source in Genesis chapter 1. Tohu vavohu, and the heavens, and they had no light. I beheld the mountains, and lo, they trembled. And all the hills moved to and fro. I beheld, and lo, there was no man. And all the birds of the sky were fled. And I beheld, and lo, the fruitful place of the wilderness, and all its cities were broken down at the presence of Jehovah and by his fierce anger. It goes on after the white space and talks about how darkness comes back. This is a reversal of the creation, an undoing. And this is in a time when everything on the outside appears to be going smoothly. The temple is in operation. Look at chapter 1, verse 3 of Zephaniah. Go back with me to Zephaniah. You had to get good at finding Zephaniah. Habakkuk, Zephaniah. Chapter 1, verse 3, where it says, I will consume man, I will consume man and beast. Where it goes down, it says, I will cut off man from the face of the ground. If you hold your hand here, I'll just tell you that in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 15, this same phrase is used. Deuteronomy 6, verse 15. In fact, let me go there for you, whether you go or not. Let's see. It goes on. You shall fear Jehovah your God and serve him and shall swear by his name. You shall not go after other gods of the people who are round about you. For Jehovah your God is a jealous God among you, lest the anger of Jehovah your God be inflamed against you and he destroy you from off the face of the ground. That's exactly the language that Zephaniah uses. Look down at chapter 1, verse 5 of Zephaniah. And I'm sorry, I'm going a little bit fast because I have quite a bit to cover. But in chapter 1, verse 5, Zephaniah talks about cutting off the remnant of Baal and the name of idolatrous priest with the priest and those who worship the host of heaven on the housetops. The host of heaven and the condemnation thereof is found in Deuteronomy and Deuteronomy only. Again, Deuteronomy 4:19, Deuteronomy 17, verse 3, and then Jeremiah also uses it in Jeremiah chapter 8, verse 2. So here's my point. Only in Deuteronomy does it talk about the host of heaven, and Jeremiah and Zephaniah, two prophets who are alive when the scroll is discovered, use it. It's part of their preaching. Now, go to Zephaniah 1. Zephaniah 1 and verse 8. Let's see. Let me make sure. Let's see. Zephaniah 1:8. I'm looking for the sons of the king. Let me see why I'm not finding it. Were they taunted? Oh, I'm looking at chapter 2. Yeah, so get the right chapter, Ross. There we go. Zephaniah 1:8. And it shall come to pass on the day of Jehovah's feast that I will punish the princes and the king's sons and all such as are clothed in foreign apparel. And on that same day I'll punish all those who leap over the threshold, who fill their master's house with violence and deceit. And that's a white space. Now here's the thing. People read prophetic texts, and they often read them without placing them in their historical context. When Zephaniah speaks, he is speaking during the days of Josiah. And I want you to notice now that he talks about this day that's coming and punishment. And the sons of the king means the sons of Josiah, which is exactly what happens. And when it talks about those who don foreign apparel, one of the criticisms at the time throughout the prophetic voice that occurs in both in Kings and also in the prophets is that the people and the leaders in particular are leaning on foreigners for help. They're leaning on Egypt. So this is what Zephaniah is saying. He's directly addressing the punishment will come very soon in the days of the children of the king, and it's going to also affect those who put on this foreign apparel, those who are leaning on the other nations. This isn't something that points forward thousands of years out of its text. It's talking about Zephaniah's talking to the people of his day. All right. Now look down at verse 10. And it shall come to pass on that day, says Jehovah, that there shall be the noise of a cry from the fish gate and a wailing from the second quarter, is what it says in English, and a great crashing from the hills. Wail, you inhabitants of Moktesh, for all the merchant peoples are undone. All that waste silver are cut off. This, every bit of this makes sense in context. If you don't get the context, you read over it and you might as well be reading the quatrains of Nostradamus. It's not a guessing game. It's not, these words mean something. The fact that Zephaniah says that the wailing comes from the Mishneh. Notice where it says in verse 10 that a cry, a wailing, actually in Hebrew, it's not wailing, it's a voice of crying. I can see where they could get wailing. But a crying voice is heard. Like you could go, where's that coming from? I hear crying. Because trouble is coming, I hear crying, it's in the Mishneh. The Mishneh is the second quarter of Jerusalem. And you say, what does that have to do with anything? Guess where the announcement of the coming danger begins? In the Mishneh. Guess who lives in the Mishneh? Go back to 2 Kings, 2 Kings 22 and verse 14. 2 Kings 22, 14. And this is where they send the delegation to Huldah, where we started. So Hilkiah the priest and Ahikam and Achbor and Shaphan and Asiah went to Huldah the prophetess, the wife of Shalom, the son of Tikva, the son of Harchas, keeper of the wardrobe. Now she dwelt in Jerusalem in the second quarter, and they spoke with her. Now in the Hebrew it says the Mishneh. So the English is the same, and so is the Hebrew. So she is dwelling in the Mishneh. They go to her, and they hear the words, and you can bet that there were sobs. Because a prediction is made, and I believe that's what Zephaniah is saying. Now, Zephaniah gets even more specific. Zephaniah gets specific. I want you to go to Zephaniah chapter 1, verse 13. Therefore, their wealth shall become a prey, their houses a desolation. They shall also build houses, but not inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards, but not drink the wine of them. Zephaniah is quoting here. He's quoting the words of a book. He's quoting Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 30. One of the curses is that they will build houses and not inhabit them. They will plant vineyards but not drink the wine. Only Deuteronomy. Now, like Jeremiah, Zephaniah puts the blame at the feet of a guilty group. Go to chapter 3 of Zephaniah, verse 4. Her prophets are worthless. Sounds like Jeremiah, doesn't it? Her prophets are worthless, treacherous persons. Her priests have polluted the sanctuary. They have violently perverted Torah. Now, wait a minute. I thought that everything was going well in the days of Josiah. I thought there was a great reform, and that the temple was in operation. And here it says from an eyewitness that something's not right. That the priest, those, as Jeremiah calls them, those who are supposed to handle the Torah, not only have they misinterpreted it, that'd be one thing, this says that they've done violence. They profaned the holy and done violence to the Torah. This can't be overstated. On the surface, you have a national revival going on. It's like an old-timey tent meeting. People are singing, parades in the street. The temple has been cleaned and sparkling, shiny from the outside. The priests are wearing their beautiful garments and walking in and out, and the people trust in the temple. The people in the days of Josiah have re-entered a covenant. They pledged to do the right thing. They're keeping the Torah. They just kept the best Passover since the days of the judges or the days of Samuel. The temple is in full swing. Sacrifices are being offered. Smoke is ascending into the heavens. The ark is in its place. And Jeremiah is going into the temple and saying, don't say, this is the temple, this is the temple, this is the temple. If you trust in this place. Now, he is such a downer. Everything seems to be right. But what he's saying is, this place that's supposed to be a place for God's name, you've made it into a den of thieves. This is during the Reform. A den of thieves. Jeremiah says, and almost lost his life for this, that the temple will be destroyed, just like Micah had done in his days. Micah chapter 3, verse 12, for this reference. He says that Jerusalem, that Zion will be plowed and the Temple Mount basically just wiped clean. They tried to kill Micah as well. They tried to kill Jeremiah for saying it, and Jesus of Nazareth was killed in the second temple period. Let me tell you something. You speak out against the religious establishment who thinks they have it all figured out, and you will be dragged through the mud at a minimum and more than likely killed for standing up and speaking what Jehovah tells you to speak. I can almost imagine Jeremiah and Zephaniah sitting on a hill, and I've been there myself, and overlooking the Temple Mount. And Jeremiah saying, you see these beautiful buildings? Not one stone will be left upon another. And because of these words, the people seek to kill. Jeremiah said the temple would be destroyed. The ark would be no more. And in chapter 7, verse 21 through 26, he even said that God never asked for sacrifices. Now, you talk about shaking up the religious establishment of the day. He goes on to say in chapter 8, verse 8, that the Torah itself, at a minimum, this is the most favorable way to translate this, that it was written in vain. In other words, everything that was written, you're not paying attention to it. The worst case scenario is he's suggesting, like Zephaniah, that violence has been done to it when he says that the lying pen of the scribes has made it a lie. Now, I'm talking about these prophetic voices, they're not your orthodoxy. They're against the orthodoxy. They are challenging the religious status quo of their day. And every time somebody does that, they set themselves up for attack. Yeah, on the surface, everything seems to be okay. But Jeremiah and Huldah and Zephaniah, they see through the facade. Jeremiah said that he, right underneath the surface, he could see in his mind's eye. In fact, it's It's the second vision Jeremiah has. The first one is an almond tree about how he sees an almond and Jehovah tells him, I will hasten my word to perform it. It's a play on the Hebrew word for almond. In other words, an almond is the hastening fruit because it's the first to appear in the season. And just like that, he said, you see that, Jeremiah? You see that almond? I'm going to hasten my word to perform it, and it's not going to be good. The next thing Jehovah tells him, what do you see, Jeremiah? And Jeremiah sees a cauldron of catastrophe. And it's tipped, it's bubbling, and it's tipped from the north. And it's about to spill out on Jerusalem. If one listened, if one had ears to hear and eyes to see, the words of a song were being played in the streets. Moses wrote a song about 1400 BCE. And in the 7th century BCE, if I can use this analogy, Huldah, Jeremiah, and Zephaniah did a cover for it. They did a cover for the Song of Moses. Here are a few lyrics and the way Jeremiah interpreted them in his rendition of the Moses song. Go with me to Jeremiah chapter 2. Jeremiah chapter 2 and verse 4. Hear the word of Jehovah, house of Yaakov, and all the families of the house of Israel. Thus says Jehovah, what iniquity have your fathers found in me that they have gone far from me and have walked after vanity and have themselves become worthless? In the song in chapter 32 of Deuteronomy, verse 4, Jehovah is said to be a God va'en alvel, without wrong, without iniquity. When Jeremiah sings the song to the people of his day, he uses that language associating God with Avel. It's in Deuteronomy in the song, and it's in Jeremiah's words. In chapter 2, verse 28 of Jeremiah, arise and save us, but where are your gods that you've made yourself? Let them arise if they can save thee in your time of trouble. For according to the number of your cities are your gods, O Judah. Where are your gods are the words to Jeremiah's song. Words that were originally penned by Moses in Deuteronomy 32:37. The song said that Jehovah would hide his face and see what their end would be. That's in Deuteronomy 32:20. In Jeremiah chapter 12, verse 4, Jeremiah says that the people say he will not see our end, clearly using language from the song and almost mocking the song. Moses' song of witness said that the people would grow fat. Jeshurun would grow fat and kick, Deuteronomy 32:15. In chapter 5, verse 28 of Jeremiah, that very report is given about the people. The song says that the sins of the people would ignite a fire in Deuteronomy 32:22. And in Jeremiah 15:14 and 17 and verse 4, Jeremiah sings the same lyrics. Jeremiah ate the words of the Moses scroll, and when he spoke, he relied heavily on Deuteronomic language, let's call it. Let's look at Jeremiah for a couple of examples. Jeremiah 32, verse 21. And has made thee a name at this day, and have brought your people out of the land of Egypt with signs, with wonders, with a strong hand, and with a stretched out arm, great terror, and have given them this land which you did swear to their fathers to give them. A strong hand and an outstretched arm, when used to describe the rescue of Israel from Egypt, is used by Deuteronomy and Deuteronomy only. Here are your references. Chapter 4, verse 34. Chapter 5, verse 15. Chapter 7, verse 19. Chapter 11, verse 2. And chapter 26 and verse 8. But go with me to Jeremiah 21. Jeremiah 21, verse 4. Watch this. Verse 3, let's go with. Then said Jeremiah to them, thus shall you say to Zedekiah, thus says Jehovah, God of Israel, behold, I will turn back the weapons of war that are in your hands with which you fight against the king of Babel and against the Kasdim who besiege you outside the walls, and I will assemble them into the midst of this city, and I myself will fight against you with an outstretched arm, outstretched hand and a strong arm, even in anger, in fury, and great wrath. You understand that what he's saying there is, with everything that Jehovah pulled to bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, he will now use to drive them into exile. The same arm and hand which brought them into the land will take them out. The imagery is not only visually, but it should strike the heart. With the same power that he rescued, he will send away. Go with me to Jeremiah chapter 11. Jeremiah chapter 11. Jeremiah is influenced by the words of a single book more than any other. Jeremiah 11, 1, the word that came to Jeremiah from Jehovah, saying, hear the words of this covenant, and speak to the men of Judah and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and say to them, thus says Jehovah, God of Israel, cursed be the man that obeys not the words of this covenant which I commanded your fathers on the day that I brought them out of the land of Egypt from the iron furnace, saying, obey my voice and do them. According to all which I command you, so shall you be my people, and I will be your God, that I may perform the oath which I have sworn to your fathers to give them a land flowing with milk and honey as it is this day. And I answered and I said, amen, O Jehovah. This text, Jeremiah 11, verse 1 through 5, is based on readings from Deuteronomy. First of all, in Deuteronomy chapter 27 is a list of curses. Cursed be the man who this. Cursed be the man. And you know what the response is? Amen. It's only in Deuteronomy. When Jeremiah talks about this, he's drawing from Deuteronomy. Go with me to Jeremiah chapter 3, verse 1. Jeremiah 3, 1. It was said, if a man put away his wife, and she go from him and become another man's wife, shall he return to her again? Shall not the land be greatly polluted? But you've played the harlot with many lovers, and will you yet return again to me? Go with me to Deuteronomy 24, the only place that Jeremiah can get this from, because it's the only place it exists. By the way, just in Jeremiah 11, something that just hit me that I forgot to mention, when he talked about the iron furnace, that phrase too is only used in Deuteronomy and it's found in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 20. So when he says when God rescued him from the iron furnace, he can only be referring to Deuteronomy, just in case you needed one more proof. Deuteronomy 24, verse 1, when a man has taken a wife and married her, and it come to pass that she find no favor in his eyes because he has found some unseemliness in her, then let him write her a bill of divorce and give it to her hand and send her out of his house. And when she is departed out of his house, she may go and be another man's wife. And if the latter husband hate her and write her a bill of divorce and give it into her hand, then send her out of his house. And if the latter husband who took her to be his wife should die, then her former husband who sent her away may not take her again to be his wife after she's defiled. For that is an abomination before Jehovah, and you shall not cause the land to be sinful which Jehovah your God gives you for an inheritance. Now, what Jeremiah is using as an analogy, he's drawing from Deuteronomy 24. And notice, if you didn't notice, Jeremiah 3:1 talks about, wouldn't this cause a defilement of the land? It's exactly what Deuteronomy 24 says. When Jeremiah wants to describe the extent of idolatry in the land of Israel, first of all, he's already said, you, Israel, Judah too, you, people of Israel, have as many gods as you have towns. Look, this idea, this gets me now. I guess the more I read the Bible, the more it gets me. This idea that there is this long tradition of exactitude in religious truth is just not biblical. Idolatry, the extent of idolatry was so much that in Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 20, chapter 3, verse 6, and chapter 3, verse 13, Jeremiah says that, on every mountain, hill, and under every green tree. Those three. Use sometimes two of them, sometimes this two, that two. But he's quoting that from Deuteronomy chapter 12, verse 2, to talk about the extent of their idolatry. In chapter 7 and verse 6 in Jeremiah, I'm just giving you just a couple of these because I've got so, I just can't do it all, but I want to cover the points. In Jeremiah 7, 6 and chapter 22, verse 3, we read of the sojourner, or stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. Those three together are particular to one book in the Pentateuch, Deuteronomy. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times in Deuteronomy. You remember the loincloth in Jeremiah chapter 13, where he takes a loincloth and he goes and buries it and it spoils it and he puts it on, it clings to him. And he talks about in that particular passage where Jehovah's speaking about a name, a praise, and a glory. That comes from Deuteronomy 26, verse 19, and only Deuteronomy. Moses' scroll tells us that a Torah, a teaching, was placed before them, the people. Blessings and curses. In Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 8, let's go ahead and read a couple of these. Deuteronomy 4, verse 8. It says, and what nation is there so great that has statutes and judgments so righteous as all this Torah which I set before you this day? I think that's pretty literal. I think he means, I'm putting this Torah before you. It's not just, he's not just saying I'm speaking this to you. He says, this Torah which I put before you today, right here, what God is so great that has statutes and judges all as this Torah which I put before you? Same phrase occurs in chapter 11, verse 32 of Deuteronomy, chapter 30, verse 1, verse 15, and verse 19. But in the days of Josiah, That scroll was found again. And so when Jeremiah says, look with me at Jeremiah 9. Jeremiah 9, verse 13. Verse 12. Jeremiah 9, 12. And Jehovah says, because they've forsaken my Torah, which I set before them, and have not obeyed my voice, nor walked therein, but have walked after the stubbornness of their own heart, and after the Baalim, as their fathers taught them, and so forth. Jeremiah, Jehovah says to Jeremiah, this Torah that I set before them, I believe he's put it before them again, in a literal way. The scroll was found. I received a couple of notes this week that said, do you think that's the only copy? Don't you think they had other copies of it? Stay with me. The answer to that is coming. But the scroll that was found is not a copy. It's the scroll. Now look with me at Jeremiah 26, please. Jeremiah 26. And verse 4. And you shall say to them, thus says Jehovah, if you will not hearken to me to walk in my Torah, which I have set before you, to hearken to the words of my servants, the prophets, whom I send to you, then I will, sending from morning to night, but you have not hearkened, then will I make this house like Shiloh, and make this city a curse to all the nations of the world. Jehovah says that this Torah that I've set before you in your generation, if you don't adhere to it, then everything which you see will be demolished. What was placed before the people in the days of Josiah, in the days of Huldah, in the days of Jeremiah and Zephaniah, was an ancient witness. The words of a song, the words of a scroll, it contained blessings and curses, life and death, and a promise of impending destruction. Root out, pull down, overthrow, and destroy. Huldah, Jeremiah, and Zephaniah sang a cover of that song in their day. You see, Moses left Egypt. He led Israel 40 years and wrote the words of a song. Jeremiah performed the song, led Israel as a prophet for 40 years, and ended his days, best we know, in Egypt. Everything got reversed. But before Jeremiah went to Egypt, he spoke of Yamim Baim. He wrote his own scroll predicting a new covenant. A new covenant with better promises. And it was greater than the former. Fact. Not even like it. Jeremiah learned about this new covenant, this better covenant, from the words of a scroll written by Moses around 1400 BCE. And we're going to talk about what Jeremiah saw in that scroll that caused him to write his own scroll called the New Covenant Scroll And for that, you have to join me next week. Ha'azinu, give ear. Shabbat shalom.